At the front of the chancel of the West Hartford Universalist Church in Connecticut is a large four-paneled stained glass window. Every Sunday, the congregation gathers in front of that window. Now, you may not be able to see it very well, but my colleague who serves that congregation tells me it is a picture of Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. And he tells me when people come in and they're a little challenged by it, he asks them if it was a picture of Buddha washing the feet of some disciples, how they would feel about it. Now, this congregation, formed in 1821 and currently over 500 members, writes on their website about their stained glass. Visitors from other Unitarian Universalist churches may be surprised by the stained glass window which graces our sanctuary and stairways. Depictions of Jesus and his disciples are not a common motif in the churches of our liberal religion. And not all who worship with us may embrace these Christian themes. But the windows are part of our congregation's history. They were designed in an earlier era for a former church building, and we treasure them for their beauty and their link to our shared past. Now, I'm not advocating for that motif on our new stained glass windows, but there is no denying that it is part of our shared past as well. Now, you may have heard me use the metaphor of a stream to describe our Unitarian Universalist tradition. A stream with many tributaries. A stream whose source, whose wellspring maybe even, goes back to the very origins of Christianity. So we'll start today by taking a little tour back there. During the first couple centuries of Christianity, there were lots of ideas floating around, and all was, let's say, pretty good. But over time, people started to get confused. Who were these Christians, and what really did they believe? Perhaps like what some people wonder about Unitarian Universalists now. So camps of different beliefs began to form. One of them were the Arians, who followed a guy named Arius, who disputed the Trinitarian nature of God, claiming that there was one God and that Jesus was of a lesser nature. And from him, we can see that source of Unitarian, because that's the meaning of Unitarian, is one God. It's in opposition to Trinitarian and was considered a heresy. Then there was Origen of Alexandria. This was the second century, and Christians were being prosecuted at that time. The story goes that Origen, at the age of 17, his father had been imprisoned and then killed as a Christian, and he was willing to martyr himself for this faith as well. But his mother kept hiding all of his clothes so he couldn't leave the house and saved his life. And from there, he went on to become a dedicated scholar, devoting himself single-mindedly to the pursuit of Christian truth through the use of reason as well as faith. And the more he studied the Bible, the more he began to doubt the usual notion of the existence of heaven and hell. Origen believed that everyone, not just Christians, not just good people, could find redemption. Those are the first concepts of what we now call universalism, universal salvation, that there is a love that God has that is available to all. Now, both of these men and many others who shared their beliefs were deemed heretics, and they suffered greatly for bringing their beliefs into the world. But their theology outlived them, and these disputes ultimately led to the Council of Nicaea in 325. The council tightened things up a bit, and they created the Nicene Creed. How many of you are familiar with it? Yeah, right? We believe in one God. Surprise, right? It starts, we believe in one God. I had to go back and listen to that. But then it's, and Jesus as part of that one God. Clearly, Unitarian and Universalist theology was left on the cutting room floor of that council. and the Christian tradition went on its way for centuries, Trinitarian, focused on an exclusive Christian connection to God, and for much of its history on the depravity of humanity. Now, there were many, many other heretics along the way, and Unitarian and Universalist belief in Christian theology sputtered along mostly in the shadows until the Reformation. And there was a little branch of the Reformation, a little offshoot, called the Radical Reformation. And there were people like a man called Michael Servetus, who took the stuff that Calvin was saying and pushed it even further out. So he was questioning Catholic doctrine, pointing out, once again, that the Trinity is nowhere written in the Bible. There is nothing in the Bible that talks about the Trinity. And he even questioned the sacrament of communion during that time, clearly advocating for the use of reason in religious dialogue and religious practice. He, too, was deemed a heretic, and he was burned at the stake for his beliefs. Fast forward to the roots of Unitarian Universalism in this country. This is a quick, trace of Unitarian Universalist history. Among our great thinkers were Universalist Hosea Ballou. In 1805, while this country was steeped in Calvinism and Puritanism, he had wrote the Treatise on Atonement. And his reading of the Bible said that it supported a universal salvation. That sense that if there is because he was a theist, a loving God would not pick some people as chosen and leave a bunch of people to burn in hell. He also rejected the traditional view of Jesus' crucifixion as an atonement for sin. Do you know that traditional Christian line that Jesus died for our sins? And so he presented God instead as an unconditionally loving parent who would never put one of theirs up in sacrifice. This was crazy talk for the Calvinist Puritan culture in which he lived. Likewise, Unitarian minister William Ellery Channing taught that God is infinitely good around that same time, maybe 20 years later. What else do I want to say about Channing? He rejected Orthodox Christian doctrines of the human deprivation, salvation of the few, eternal damnation of the rest. And he insisted that any documents claiming that Jesus died to appease God's wrath on human sin was not only unscriptural, but also, he wrote, immoral and absurd. So these were pretty outspoken people at the time. These people and many others shaped a Unitarianism and a Universalist Christian tradition in this country, as separate and apart from the more traditional mainline Christians. But you can see over time now that many of these ideas are actually a part of a progressive Christianity that lives in this country right now. They were focused on the life of Jesus, our acts for justice while on this earth at this time, and an ever-widening welcome into our religious communities. That's where Unitarian Universalist Christianity was kind of pushing and expanding Christianity within this country. Time passed, and the nation moved west, and with it the streams of Unitarianism and Universalism, carried by these initial theologies that welcomed questioning and a broad embrace. This stream then gained many tributaries: humanism, atheism, paganism, Buddhism, just to name a few. So pretty soon, this tradition was not within a container of Christianity. And in many contexts, they sought to leave Christianity behind. Does that sound familiar to those of you who have been Unitarian Universalists for a while? Yeah. But no institution and no individual can ever fully leave their history behind. Because even a rejection of your past is a relationship with your past. So each of us has had our own relationship with Christianity. It's impossible not to have a relationship with Christianity in this country. You may have been raised in a strict fundamentalist Christian tradition which deeply hurt you as they preached about the depravity of your queer soul. Deeply painful. And I don't want to minimize the hurt that has come from some particular strands of Christianity. Or your mainstream Christian upbringing simply became irrelevant as you entered adulthood. Or your atheist parents didn't bring you to church at all and just left you wondering. Or you implicitly learned in your Jewish community to be a little wary of Christians. Or you came from a beautifully inspired Christian tradition and a personal relationship with God and Jesus that still remains true to you to this day as a Unitarian Universalist Christian. There's any other possibility of story in there. But what's your story about your intersection with Christianity? It's important to know it, to name it, as it does shape your current religious journey. And it shapes the journey of our collective congregation. Now, when I left Catholicism as a teenager, I thought I was leaving all of organized religion behind as irrelevant to my life. That's kind of funny, isn't it? But there was some deep yearning, some longing for spiritual life in community that remained, although I would never have named it as such. And when I found Unitarian Universalism as a young adult, I needed to concede that maybe some organized religion was okay, but I still rejected Christianity and I was reactive to it. Attending a UU seminary in a multi-faith graduate theological union in Berkeley, and learning about how our Unitarian and Universalist Christian roots intersected with the broader Christian story helped me to loosen up my negative, monolithic view of Christianity. Because the other thing that happens when we reject things is we assume it's static. And it has never changed and will never change. That's a piece of kind of staying in that tension of rejection, right? So getting proximate, even for me, getting more proximate with interfaith organizing broadened my perspective even more. And I came to appreciate that Christianity is broad, meaningful, and life-giving to many, many people. And there are many more streams to the Christian tradition, many of them shaped by Unitarian and Universalist theologies. And I could see then even how my beliefs intersected with those of liberal Christianity, so much so that by the time I was 33, I could accept a call at a progressive United Church of Christ congregation as my first call to ministry. I would have never dreamed that that was possible when I left Christianity as a teenager. I would have never dreamed this whole thing was possible. That congregation gave me this stole. It was made by Palestinian Christians. And I don't wear it very much because it doesn't quite fit in our context. But it is deeply meaningful to me. Even as I served that congregation, Eden United Church of Christ in Hayward, for 4 years as their associate minister for social justice ministry, I never considered myself a Christian. And I still struggled with the language and the belief in a personal relationship with God. It just doesn't quite fit me. My sense of the ultimate mystery is more like an embrace of love that I can choose to connect with rather than an intelligence that I can kind of ask for a personal concern, you know, personally summons. Does that make sense? And many Unitarian and Universalists today can appreciate the life of the human being Jesus as one who came to bring a radically inclusive notion of love into the world. Many might be able to separate that life from the many forms of Christianity that distorted the message over time. But the symbol of the cross and the resurrection, that one's much trickier. It really stirs things up in us and stirs things up in me. I won't speak for y'all. It stirs things up in me. And that's why when I read Reverend Yvonne Sion's reading about the cross, it caught me up short. It was what Jean read about, oh, and I wish I had it in front of me. I'll just keep going. Because each Sunday in my Catholic upbringing, I stared not only at a cross at the chancel every day, but I stared at a crucifix, right? It's a cross with a mangled body of Jesus on it. And the messaging from that for me was a symbol of suffering, a theology that taught that suffering was good and godly. And as I became more entrenched in understanding of feminism, that message became even more difficult for me. So when I was serving as a minister in the UCC, I just kind of avoided that part of Christian theology. And it's kind of easy to do within the UCC, I gotta say. But what I heard in that reading was an interpretation of the cross, not as suffering, but as sacrifice. And that's different for me, and it allows me a way in. That if we are serious about building the beloved community here, we all need to be willing to sacrifice, to pick up what is ours to do, and to do it, so that we can create a more meaningful world for those that will come after. That just turned me around. This is like 2 weeks ago that turned me around, right? So like I am like reborn in an understanding about this stuff. So it was super helpful for me to get past another area of a Christian doctrine that I had rejected. Those parts in us that are wounded and not healed in our religious background, our religious baggage, they need tending. Because if we're not willing to tend them, they can become stuck places and limit our possibilities within ourselves to have more metaphors at our disposal to be the people we want to be, but also, more importantly, limit our relationships with others. Because it's easy to go for this belief doesn't work for me to having judgment about people for whom that belief works. Do you understand that? It's a very, very easy bridge to cross. And certainly, there are instances when religion is abusive. And I'm not talking about that. Anger, judgment, and the need to distance oneself from abusive religion is completely appropriate. I'm talking about the blanket statements that we might have about places we were stuck and the little wounds that we might need to be able to work with and tend so that we can actually be the more inclusive community that our religious forebears were yearning for. They stretched it and stretched it and stretched it with what was available in their times. And in these times of so much divisiveness, it is our turn to stretch, 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 to find our ways to get past those places that are troubling for us and to sacrifice, to expand that concept of the beloved community that was so central to the message of Jesus, of Buddha, and of many of the prophets in the religious traditions that we honor. May this be our promise and our prayer. Amen.